It's a good show.
In a world where every conversation is about what movie or TV show you've just seen, one comedian doing his own voiceover for his own podcast due to monetary restrictions got tired of pretending he's seen The Wire in conversations at parties. This is Never Seen It. Comedians rewriting famous movies and TV shows they've never seen. I'm Kyle Ayers. Hey, everybody. This is Never Seen It. I'm your host, Kyle Ayers. This is the podcast where I have comedians rewrite famous movies and TV shows they've never seen, and then we read them for you here in studio. Before we get into it today, I just want to remind everyone we recently launched a Patreon page. I think we're the first podcast to take advantage of this website, Patreon. For $5, you can subscribe to Never Seen It's Patreon, and you'll get bonus episodes every week. I'm also re-releasing my podcast, Faking a Murderer, where I talk to people about making a murder without telling them I've never seen it. And so if you want to hear me talk about true crime for 8 hours with people who don't know I've never seen the show, that's also on the Patreon. We're going to have video clips. We're going to have live show clips and everything. It's patreon.com/neverseenit. And we appreciate if you subscribe there. But anyways, let's get into the show today. Today, we are joined by Bowen Yang and Matt Rogers of Los Culturistas.
Hi, Kyle.
Hello.
Thank you for being here.
It's wonderful to be here.
It's beautiful to be here.
And to catch you on your return from Bonnaroo.
Right. Do I look tan?
You do.
You have a glow.
Thank you.
You have a post-festival air.
Yeah. Was that the reason for going? So that you could go get like a solid glow?
Probably.
Yeah.
There's something that happens whenever you're at a... I hate festivals unless I'm at one. And then I'm at one and I'm just like, this is how it should always be. And then the moment I leave, I'm like, we should never have festivals.
Yeah. Thank God I'm out.
The overall concept is, like, who thought of that?
It just seems muddy to me. Literally muddy. Not even, like, conceptually muddy. I very much understand what Bonnaroo is.
Right.
I just know that I wouldn't do well like without air conditioning and heat like that.
Oh yeah, I could never go back as not a performer because we got to go back to the air conditioned trailer like 4 or 5 times a day, and people drove us around everywhere.
Right,
the privilege.
Yeah. I heard there was some drama, and this might be a little too inside baseball for everybody, but even like us, but like someone was telling me there's some drama about the tent this year, the comedy tent not having all the amenities that the musicians had.
Oh, my God.
And I don't know what your experience with
that
is.
Like, the whole time, the comedy tent didn't have a single Tom Petty cover tribute band.
Which you need.
Which is I don't know. We were in a barn.
You had a barn?
There were a couple venues. I have nothing to compare it to. But what was interesting is the barn we were performing in was Christmas-themed, so it had a million Christmas lights and a bubble machine.
Okay.
And you would see people get attracted to it. It didn't look like where comedy would be, especially at a music festival where everyone is on just whatever drug cocktail they're on.
Sure. Yeah.
So people would walk in expecting EDM, a DJ, anything that you'd expect in a painted black Christmas light covered barn, and you're not expecting comedy.
They were trapped into doing it.
Sure, but at that point, it's like if I'm walking into a kitschy barn, like I expect a Chili's menu. Like I know what I'm getting into. Yeah. I'm not gonna get EDM out of that.
Something goofy.
Everyone came and then they stayed because it was air conditioned.
There you go.
So then you get a nice docile audience, and it was all right. But anyways, that's enough. Bonnaroo, and I turned 30, which was exciting.
Congrats.
So
happy
30-year-old
podcast.
How
do you feel now?
There was a point, back to the festival. I turned 30, and I saw 2 Sheryl Crow sets while I was 30.
Wonderful.
And I was like, I've spent 15 to 20% of my 30s seeing Sheryl Crow live.
Did it make you happy?
It's wonderful. She was great.
Yeah.
She kept saying, she was like, all these songs are older than you guys. She asked one person where their parents were.
Oh, my God. She would have been a real crowd pleaser. You know what
great.
I mean? Like,
yeah, I'm sure.
I bet
everyone
was she during the day, too?
Yeah, at like 1 or 2 p.m.
Great. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It was great.
Because you want to hear Soak Up the Sun while you're doing that.
Yes.
She even said something like, this next song is about soaking up the sun, which is hilarious.
I bet that earned a response.
It's hilarious. People are really into it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
All right. Never seen it.
Never
the podcast.
Seen it.
you guys both wrote a different movie, which is exciting.
We did.
And does anyone have a preference on whose scene we get into first?
I feel Matt we're hot off the presses with Matt's script.
I wrote mine today, but I have, and this is a movie that is very iconic.
Yes.
So I've had my entire life to watch it. I know it's like, I know some things about it. I know it's like an icon of 70s cinema, mm-hmm. like when the movies were, I mean, I think it's like commonly held belief among like cinephiles that the 1970s were the height of cinema in terms of like, you know, prestige
sure.
film.
Well, I mean, this particular movie, it's like you still get like beautifully intelligent intellectual bros
right.
at a bar being like, it still holds up today. Like,
exactly.
Yeah. It's yeah. still ahead of its time. It's still ahead of its time.
Yes. And yeah. the film is Network.
Yes, Network.
Network.
I had an opportunity to see it in college and didn't go because it was in a class and I skipped for some reason.
Okay, so you haven't seen it either. Have you? And you have?
I have. And all I remember is like the moment we all know, and then
yeah, there's a moment we all know, which is the only thing I know about. I know Faye Dunaway is in it.
And Faye Dunaway is in it, and she like is really good at like thinking in a boardroom. Like that's what okay. she does.
Didn't even know that.
Okay, cool.
All right.
Great.
Well, we got to get some instruments.
Oh, sure.
Oh,
so
right.
You can score the whole podcast too, not just the scenes.
Love it.
So whoever wants to grab anything, you can okay. stand up. It's fine.
Great.
Okay, I'm going to take... Where was my water? Okay. I'm trying to think about what I need to score my own scene, and it really is like, and this is what I assume about the film too, it's very dialogue driven.
Yeah.
And it's very like the intense personal drama. I think you'll see.
Did someone famous write it?
Another add it to the list of things we don't know.
Network, yeah.
But I'm sure that they're very happy they wrote it, whoever they are.
Sure. Absolutely.
Because they have a legion of bros right. saying that they're brilliant in bars. Okay.
All right.
Are we ready?
We're ready.
Everyone knows
oh,
their
we
parts?
Should cast who, we should tell everyone who we are
yes.
if they're listening.
Well, I'll be reading the stage directions, and I'll be playing actress later who reveals who she is
okay.
later, so you'll know. It'll get more clear than that.
Great. I'm reading for Phil and Chad.
And I will be Faye Dunaway and Surgeon.
Lovely.
Beautiful. Okay. We begin. All right, fade in. Interior, hotel room. A large man, Phil, is pacing about, fuming. He is large and appears to be very rich, but right now he's fuming and his skin is very red.
That does it!
Phil runs over to the window, flings it open, and leans out.
I'm mad as hell and I'm not gonna take it anymore.
Suddenly, Faye Dunaway runs in.
Lower your goddamn voice, Phil. The whole town can hear you. The whole town of Chicago.
I hope they hear. I'm angry, Faye. Angry at the world.
Well, you're not the only one. I was just at an event and I was talking to a big producer. Could have really made it happen for my career. Then a waitress came over, real dumbass, asked if I was done with my meal. Well, I'm mid-conversation. I was so thrown I forgot what I was saying. The big producer moved on to a conversation with someone else. I didn't get to network.
Oh, I was mad because I couldn't get an appointment with my dermatologist. I have a red thing on my chest.
He opens his shirt to reveal a red thing, like a welt on his chest.
Oh, ew, what is that?
I don't know, but it looks not good, right? I want to get it checked out, but my derm is booked solid. I am a large white man who you can assume is rich. I shouldn't have problems getting appointments.
Faye lights a long, long cigarette, like the kind fancy ladies smoke.
Well, it sounds like we both have problems that are making us angry. You need to get your weird red thing on your skin looked at, and I want to talk to Hollywood producers. I'm an actress.
Are you thinking what I'm thinking?
Say it on three.
One, two, three.
We go to the set of MASH because there are Hollywood types there, and also because probably doctors, because someone needs to be on set to make sure they're getting the doctor shit right.
Okay, let's do it.
Wait, but you didn't say your idea on three.
Oh, I know. I got really nervous. I think the countdown made me nervous, and I just didn't say anything.
Okay. Freak!
Exterior, set of MASH. Actors who are dressed as doctors are milling about. Faye Dunaway and Phil walk up to one of them.
Excuse me. Hi. I'm the actress Faye Dunaway, and this is Phil, a white man who's feeling angry. Angry enough to scream out a window!
I'm a young Cloris Leachman.
Oh, listen. I'm here to network with industry, and Phil has a disgusting red thing on his chest that just needs to get checked out. Looking to bang out both these tasks while we're here.
Okay, yeah. Go in that tent over there. They should be having the morning meeting now.
The morning meeting?
Yes. Every morning we have a meeting to talk about the day. Even though this is Hollywood and you think it would be glamorous, it's really just like any other workplace. A man in a suit, Chad, comes over.
Hey, Cloris, we're going to pay you a lot less than all the men.
Amazing. Thank you, Chad.
Chad leaves.
What the hell was that?
That's one of the executive producers, Chad, delivering my reality.
Producer, I must follow him. Phil, will you be okay in that tent?
Yes.
Interior tent. Phil is laying on an operating table with his shirt open. A surgeon stands over him with a knife.
It's an ingrown hair. I'm going to cut it out of you now.
Go for it.
I'm not a real surgeon, by the way. I'm an extra.
What? Then how do you know if it's an ingrown hair?
I have a lot of experience with ingrown hairs because for a lot of projects I work on, or I have to be completely hairless. Don't ask. So I commonly shave my own body, and ingrown hairs are a side effect of hair removal.
Okay, I don't care. I'm mad as hell and can't take it anymore. Cut me open, Doc.
The surgeon brings down the knife. Phil screams. Exterior dirt path. Faye Dunaway is chasing Chad the EP down a dirt path. She is running and screaming, and he obviously can hear her, but he keeps walking ahead.
Mr. Producer! Mr. Producer! Chad!
Chad wheels around, furious.
No one uses my real name, especially not a woman. A woman that is not as monetarily valuable as me.
Now you... Just you shut up.
Chad does a double take.
I may be a woman, but I'm a businesswoman, and I'm here to network.
Oh.
I have a lot of industry savvy, and I want to talk to you so that you think of me for projects in the future.
Fine. You have 30 seconds to network with me.
Faye smiles brightly and looks to the sky, elated.
Yes!
Interior tent. Phil is sitting up in the tent. His chest is bloody and a mess.
Bitch, you made it much worse!
Oh my god, I know, and I apologize. But on the bright side, now I have experience that I can bring to my acting as an extra. This was a positive exchange for me.
Well, not for me, because...
A full choir comes out and sings. I am mad as hell, and I'm not gonna take it anymore. Everyone stands breathlessly as the curtain falls on the movie. Fade out.
Wow.
Network.
Thank
you all. Wonderful performances.
Thank you.
You bring my script to life.
Oh, my God.
I mean, I had a lot of favorite parts, but it's hard to beat The Curtain Falls on the Movie.
And that's why it's the finale. I wanted to leave everyone wanting more. I wanted everyone to watch the movie and think, where did that curtain come from?
I just pictured me in my living room throwing a flower at my television.
Yes. Bravo, film.
Beautiful.
I feel that that was probably the movie.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
And you've seen it?
I've seen it. Yeah, it is. It's very dialogue heavy.
Yeah, I knew that.
And so for that reason, I think I was tired. I was not like under the influence of anything. I was just tired when I saw it.
Oh.
So I don't remember the actual parts except for when Faye was on screen.
Okay.
And she was just giving you really good 70s like
and
businesswoman.
Did you think did she win an Oscar for this movie or maybe come close?
Not for this.
Well, do you think that this would have been a text that could get an actress at least a nomination?
Yes.
Your script in particular?
Yeah.
Yeah. She's,
okay.
She's, you know, she's going up against
yeah.
Peril.
Right.
Peril.
There's a lot of conflict in her storyline. She has to run down a dirt path and scream someone's name. She's obviously fighting against, you know, the economic reality of the time, which, by the way, everyone has not changed too much. I really want this piece to make us
wow.
think.
Wow. Yeah. I have a question. Mm-hmm. Why didn't... What was the choice behind... Like, explain the choice behind not... naming Cloris Leachman until like she says she announces that she's Cloris Leachman.
I just think that was a you know choice in scripting, and honestly, you know, if the audience wouldn't even know that.
Okay,
so
it's
only
a real show
that.
Don't show type of thing.
It's yeah. a show don't show type of thing, and that's exactly what I was thinking. I'm always
right.
saying show don't show.
Or it's like tell and don't tell until you tell.
Right, yeah. exactly. It's more don't tell until you tell.
Sure, sure.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I like the the locations were all fairly vague, easy
yeah.
to shoot at, except one of them was the set of the television show MASH.
Right, right. Because I trust everyone on my sets to really do their job. Like, I don't want to put anything on the page.
Sure.
I don't want the set decorator
yeah,
to be
yeah.
like, you're really telling me what to do. I want them to run their imagination to run wild.
Right. Like, what kind of tent?
Yeah, exactly. And that's for them.
A surgical tent.
Yeah.
I
you know how they are.
I think, I mean, look, during award season, I will say the Academy loves a movie about the industry.
Yes, they do. Mm-hmm. Argo,
La La Land, yeah. like mm-hmm. like this, I think, that's what they'll latch on to with this.
Yeah, and yeah. also I wanted to like give the actors a chance to be really funny. And
yeah.
that was the 1-2-3 countdown moment. I thought that
Fun.
Was like a good yeah. moment of comedy for them because it's such a dark script.
Yeah.
And so
I
yeah.
need this levity in here
yeah.
so people don't get too upset. Otherwise, this is just Heredity 2.
Exactly.
Oh, yes.
It's just Heredity 2. And
yes.
I felt like that's not what I wanted to go for with this. I wanted something that could show, you know, the light and the dark. And yeah, so thank you guys.
That's gorgeous.
I loved
yeah.
it.
Gorgeous.
Wow.
I accept that. I receive and accept this.
Yeah.
Thank you.
How does this? Oh, this is nice.
Yeah.
The instruments are No one really gets too into the xylophone. There's too many moving parts,
well,
I suppose.
Yeah, it's also because you want to keep the pace up. Mm-hmm. And I feel that the xylophone requires a lot of, you know, time and energy all on its own.
Sure. It's like if I were to read my lines and do the xylophone, it's very like rubbing my stomach, patting my head sort of thing. Yeah.
Well, I actually am going to make a conscious choice to involve the xylophone more in the next piece.
Oh, okay. Wow.
Great. Yeah,
we appreciate it.
Yeah.
So we have Network, and now we're moving on to Bowen's script.
This is my script. This is another, you know, famous movie. I mean, you know, this is sort of the whole premise of the podcast, of the show. I've never seen Cruel Intentions. So,
what if it didn't work? What if the xylophone didn't work and I just didn't tell you?
If it didn't work, it would be truly, truly wild.
Okay.
So this is Cruel Intentions. You'll see that I play with the cast. I know the cast is very sort of iconic and sort of indelible. So that's what I'm working with. And you'll see. This is my sort of reimagining of this classic film.
And you've seen this, right?
I have seen Cruel
Intentions. Yeah, same, famously.
Great. What are your thoughts on it before we go into the script?
Oh, I love Cruel Intentions. I think it's like a very sexy teen film.
Great.
I love like a good like 24-year-old playing a sexy teen. I think that's really vital.
Great.
And something I'd like to see more of.
Okay.
This is one of those movies that seems like it only could have existed in 1999.
100%.
There's so many
it's very
a particular time where every movie poster had a really harsh vignette and a very skinny girl.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then it was just like it was really what am I looking for? Like explicit.
Sure. Yes,
they weren't trying to hide anything.
No, right. That you knew the movie was going to be about titties.
Well, and just,
largely.
And Kyle, I know you'll appreciate this as a Photoshop whiz. Is that reductive to say? Photoshop.
No,
I would describe myself as a Photoshop whiz as well. Okay. It was 1999 was an era of posters where you would have two people flanking.
Yeah.
But very like the scaled very large, and then you would have a different actor scaled small sitting in the middle. And I believe that is the Cruel Intentions
some sort
poster.
Of like victimized act, like the victimized character would be in the center.
Exactly.
I don't know if it's true. I'm going to assume Final Destination came out right around the same time.
Yeah,
because I can picture that poster being the same. The skulls came around at the same time. I can picture that poster.
Do you remember the Scream poster? Which was all of them kind of like peeking out, looking at something. And also the trick that Scream did, which I thought was a very good trick, was they made Drew Barrymore's character seem like she was just as big spatially as all the rest of them.
Mm-hmm.
So you thought, oh, Drew Barrymore's going to be a big character. Famously.
Dies in the first scene.
She dies 5-6 minutes into the movie.
Yeah.
And doesn't come back. It's not that kind of movie. It's very grounded.
That is a
she
fun,
dies and dies.
You're right. That is a fun trick that they do.
Beautiful, fun
trick. Because since she's out there doing press, she's on late night shows.
Oh, yeah.
Everyone's building it up and hyping it up and everything.
Yeah, and then, she was like a big star.
Yeah.
Yeah, established.
Nev Campbell who? It was all about Drew.
And
then for Drew to be gone, really anything can happen.
Now,
at that point.
I'm going to be reading across the page as well for this, and I will be reading for Blair.
Okay, I am going to be Michelle, and also Spoon.
Spoon is a character's name.
And I'm going to be Philip and Headmaster Emilio.
Perfect.
Very
amazing.
Excited.
Okay, this is Cruel Intentions. Interior fancy bedroom in a prep school. Night. We track in from the wood-paneled halls of St. Carson's Preparatory School for Sexually Precocious White Teens and into one of its bedrooms, which are numerous in the school for some reason. Inside, Michelle Geller Sarah, a beautiful young girl, paces around the room and runs her fingers across the gorgeous four-post bed.
All this aristocratic and worldly education has me aroused, both intellectually and hormonally. What to do? What to do?
Then Philip Ryan-y enters. He is very handsome, and his expression is an unmoving and furrowed brow.
Sister, here you are. You're missing the big assembly. Also, did you say aroused hormonally? Don't you tell me you're fully embracing your coquettishness.
So what if I am, Philip? After all, I've yet to apply the lessons I've learned here at St. Carson's Preparatory School for Sexually Precocious White Teens in real life. Maybe it's time that I start.
A young woman acting with emotional but ultimately carnal agency? I guess I can get on board with that.
I have to be honest, our vibe as siblings is really disturbing.
Yeah.
And even though we've never had sex, I feel like we could create some distance between us.
But, Michelle, it's my greatest wish to take our sexual tension as siblings to the limit, as a form of edge play.
I'll consider it, but only if you have sex with two other girls first.
Fine. I do need to graduate from St. Carlson's with honors. And I've yet to hit the semester's sexual quota, which figures into our final grade point average.
It's a miracle that any of this is legal. We are minors, after all.
The door creaks open and in walks Blair Selma, a beautiful raven-haired girl. Oh, Michelle and Philip, St. Carson's two most sexually compatible siblings. My apologies. Am I interrupting something? You're missing the assembly.
You've actually come at the perfect time, Ack. Blair, would you be my...
Come on, Philip. No need to be shy.
Would you be one of my sexual partners before semester's end?
Oh, Philip, I thought you'd never ask. It's usually so much easier during a Sadie Hawkins semester when it's the girls who ask guys to fuck. But this is wonderful.
It's amazing.
You have other prospects, I assume.
Actually, I don't.
Oh, no problem. Let me get my friend Spoon Witheries involved. She's scored super high in threesomes, and she can probably get you some great rec letters.
Wow, that's fantastic. Thank you. I've always admired Spoon's ability to manage multiple sexual partners and their needs at the same time as a 17-year-old.
Spoon enters.
It's all in the eye contact.
Oh, Spoon! Philip here just propositioned me for his quota this semester, and I mentioned you as another partner.
Yes, of course. Life's been pretty crazy lately ever since I sent in my early decision application to Dartmouth's prestigious ass play program, but my schedule is definitely freed up now that it's in.
This couldn't have worked out any better.
Huh. This is the strangest feeling.
What is it, Michelle?
It's nothing. I just never expected to be jealous of other people being able to... fuck my brother.
Aww.
Wait, shouldn't all of us be at the assembly right now?
In walks Headmaster Emilio Estevez, looking distressed.
Students! Students! I've just finished addressing the rest of the school and the assembly, and that effective immediately. St. Carson's Preparatory School for Sexual Precocious White Teens is closed because, wow, this is fucked up what we're putting you poor children through.
Gasp from the teens.
But Headmaster Estevez, without learning how... about how to be fully realized sexual beings with no hang-ups by age 18. What will we do? I mean, dear God, read The Great Gatsby. And have you heard of the SATs?
End of scene. Curtain down on the phone.
Wow.
That was wonderful. I have some questions.
Yeah, I don't know. I wrote it very hastily.
You missed a lot of, like, famous, iconic scenes.
Okay.
What about the scenes when the lesbians kiss?
I did not know that this was a thing.
You didn't know about the famous lesbian kiss between Sarah Michelle Gellar?
I think it might have invented the MTV Movie Award for Best Kiss.
I think it did.
I think they created the award for this part of that movie.
Okay, this is truly how unversed I am.
You truly don't know a lot about the movie.
I don't know a lot about the movie. Yeah. I just know that Sarah Michelle Gellar and Ryan Phillippe are step-siblings?
Well, yes, they're step-siblings, and you did get right that there is a large, large, large chunk of the plot dedicated to whether or not they'll have sex.
Yeah.
See, and so that's what I leaned in on. Yeah. I didn't really understand sort of the other...
characters.
The contours. Yeah, the other characters. And I realized, you know, it's so funny just hearing the pages read, and this is why we do what we do. Is that, you know what, I feel like George Lucas, and I feel like you two are my what's his face, Han Solo,
yeah, Harrison Ford.
You two
name.
Are my Harrison Fords, yeah. And what did he say once to George Lucas? He says, "You can write this out, but you can't say this shit out loud."
Yeah, he famously was like, "You can't fucking say this dialogue."
Yeah, and yeah. I, that's how I feel. I feel like so wordy, so bulky, so bogged down by the wordiness of it, the verbosity.
Well, you know,
but these
show
are
don't tell.
Very the teens in this are played beyond highly intelligent.
Sure.
I mean, they're all like little AI machines.
Yeah, like everyone behaves like a little weird Aaron Sorkin sex dream.
That's fun though. That's and I knew that about the film too, that they're these just, it was like how Britney Spears by age 16 was like fully developed, sexually confident teen, and I was like, what is that?
Yeah, they really know what they want sexually, everyone in this movie. And
I don't
they
remember,
are,
is it college or high school?
It's like a prep school.
It's like a prep
school.
High school, right? And it's all about who can sleep with the headmaster's daughter,
right?
First.
It's like
Reese.
It's like, yeah. Sarah Michelle Gellar is like a well-known student in the school, And then Ryan Phillippe is her stepbrother, who's like the bad boy.
Yeah.
And he's like looking for a new sexual conquest. Mm-hmm. And she says, "Bet you can't fuck Reese Witherspoon, who's the headmaster's daughter." And he says, "I bet I can." And she's like, "Well, if you do, I'll let you fuck me."
Yeah.
Game on.
Crazy. Yeah. Like, could you imagine?
I can imagine.
It feels like 1999. It's truly, to me, only exists the year American Beauty wins Best Picture.
Right.
It's the only
time
this is a summer movie that year.
Absolutely.
Okay. But I'm sorry, I meant to ask, could you imagine yourself in high school being able to navigate these situations? No way.
Absolutely, 100% no.
I couldn't imagine knowing what I wanted in high school, let alone in a competitive manner with someone who sleeps in the same house as me.
Yeah, right. It's a horror story.
Really terrifying.
Yeah.
You wouldn't get in a room with this treatment.
No.
Oh, no.
Not at all.
No. I love that you points it out at the end that why don't they just fucking read a book? You don't see any of these students studying.
No.
And that's the point of being in school.
And honestly, I had trouble casting, quote unquote, the headmaster because I was like, who was like the generation before them? Mm-hmm. Who had like famously played a sexually precocious teenager? All I could think of was Breakfast Club. I didn't want to do Judd Nelson. I just did Emilio instead.
Yeah.
I don't even think Emilio fucked in the Breakfast Club.
No.
I think it was just like implied that he could fuck if he wanted to.
Sure.
Yeah.
Being the jock.
It was hard. It was a different time.
It was such a different time.
Yeah.
And you couldn't make a movie like this now.
No. But you could just watch this one.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
When I was pulling up information about this, because I started thinking, my head always works in dumb, like, word games. Mm-hmm. And so I started thinking about what celebrities' names would be the funniest if you put them into your script. Because it's like Spoon with a Reese or Geller, Michelle, Sarah.
Yes.
And then I noticed this is the characters' names in this movie. This gives you the vibe of the movie. Here's the actual character
names. Oh, my God.
Sarah Michelle Geller plays Catherine, K-A-T-H-R-Y-N, Mertuil.
Catherine Mertuil.
And then there's Sebastian Valmont.
Yeah,
and Annette Hargrove. Like they all sound like different country clubs.
They sound like names for white people that you would make up.
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah, it does.
Because it's based on this 18th century French novel.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I remember we had a text. This is very like
Dangerous Liaisons.
Liaison dangereuse. And I had a whole French textbook one year in high school. That was just, that had a narrative woven through it. It was kind of cool. Like, I appreciate the effort. Mm-hmm. But it was this anthropologist trying to find the original manuscript of Dangerous Liaisons. And, like, we talked about Cruel Intentions in that class. And I was like, this feels wrong that we're talking about these sexually precocious teenagers.
I think that's what made it so right for the Hollywood bigwigs.
Yeah. Sure.
They thought they could make dollars off that.
I think they definitely, you can see when they quit drawing from the original text when they're naming characters, because there's also Ron Clifford, Bunny Caldwell, and Mr. and Mrs. Sugarman.
You gotta have a Sugarman.
You gotta have a couple sugar people in there.
Yeah.
So they clearly were on their way out with that.
I think Catherine Mertuil is like the only real strong like
that makes sense
name
that,
that they brought over from the original. And maybe the Ryan Phillippe and
Sebastian Valmont sounds
that
a
could
lot
be.
Like he invented lacrosse.
Exactly. You know, this is the movie that Reese Witherspoon and Ryan Phillippe met on.
And then would later divorce over. That's why they divorced.
Oh, yeah, and then they made good intentions.
Yeah, exactly. Good intentions.
And they split that 50-50, which was nice.
There you go.
This one, I remember watching this, and it was, I don't know if it would hold up. I mean, I haven't seen it in 10
years. No. It's also like it's not going to aggressively attack like you hormonally as it did at the time. You know what I mean? Like, this is such a horny movie to watch when you're like actually...
When you're like 14. 11 or whatever.
Yeah.
I would say that the trope of a sexually precocious teenager has not disappeared. Like, we still have that today.
Oh, absolutely.
Like I did think about the OC a lot. I thought a lot about.
Okay, I could see that.
Your Dawson's Creeks, I guess Pretty Little Liars. I don't really know what the... Oh, no, your Riverdales. Like, that is what Riverdale is.
Oh, yeah.
In a way, not like as overtly
sexual.
No.
The sexy, hot teen... is here to stay.
Of course. Yeah, it's not going to go. It's not some. It's just how it'll be portrayed.
Sure. Right.
And, which is nice. It does, at least it evolves.
And by people who are what age? You know what I mean? Right now, I think we're kind of seeing teens play teens lately. And I don't know. That's when you get the gray area comes in, because it's like once teens are playing teens, you're actually going to have to watch teens do these sexy things. And that's scary.
And it's not even, it's not a dishonest portrayal. It's just, but now I'm 30.
And
watching this in a movie theater with a bunch of 30-year-olds.
Who does that make me? Yeah.
It's like in Desperate Housewives when Eva Longoria is having sex with the gardener, and she's like, he's 17, but that man is obviously 30.
Yeah.
And you don't have to feel weird about it, because it's like, no, they're both like hot adults, but it's actually statutory rape.
Yeah.
Still statutory rape.
Look, does Joshua Jackson still look young? Can we put him back in something else?
Sure. Oh, I forgot to mention Joshua. I could have called him Jack. Joshua.
Okay. He is in the movie playing a gay character.
He was. And then who was the other gay character?
The guy from Ugly Betty, who plays Daniel in Ugly Betty.
Yeah.
Eric Mabius is his name.
Maybe Ericus.
Oh, that's a great one.
That's a fun one.
Call Me Mabius.
Oh,
Call Me Mabius.
He could have really been there.
Could have been there.
These are both great.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
We were talking a little bit right before the podcast about how you guys were just getting into a show or something that's on FX.
Yeah. We're watching Pose.
Pose.
New Ryan Murphy show.
And I trust FX, but I still don't watch very much of anything that they have on there.
Sure.
And I think Netflix has created so many television shows in the past year that I quit exploring any new television anywhere.
Do you want to know something? They're putting in $8 billion into their original programming this year alone, which... doesn't make sense. At that point, it's not even a number. It doesn't mean anything.
That's nothing.
I feel like why?
That kind of defeats the purpose of it being like so exclusive and like Netflix being cool. Because what I think is so cool about HBO is like they only greenlight so many shows.
Right.
And therefore, when HBO rolls out a new show, they put so much effort into like, you know, the promotion of it and like how amazing it looks. And like you can know the content is going to be so good that like... it gets you excited. But I guess the same rules don't apply for Netflix because they don't have hours in the day to fill. They can just put content out
there.
But
I could probably name every HBO show.
That's on right now. Wow. Yeah,
totally. I mean, maybe even if I really thought about it, I could probably name 75% of the things they've ever had.
But like with Netflix, it's like, what are you sifting through to like arrive at Glow? Like,
I know. I wish they had a whole section on Netflix that was stuff we've made that looks like the fake stuff from the beginning of Tropic Thunder.
Yeah.
And it was just a whole category.
Catalog would be immense.
Right. Like, am I into Flaked?
Am I into disjointed?
And I'm sure
what is the 2100?
Yeah.
Some of these could be fine. They just suffer from, it's like trying to go buy one thing at a gas station or something.
Right,
yeah,
like,
Why do I
like any of this actually?
Yeah.
Wow, that's a very apt analogy.
Now they just have $8 billion to make content that is, you know.
For the year. Just for the year.
That's insane.
Which is crazy. I mean, if they wanted to make a show about people who had rewritten scripts for TVs or movies. I just think we would, we could always edit out the last minute.
Sure.
100%.
It's tough to tell how I'd sell out so fast.
It's tough to tell. I'd do it real quick.
Or, you know, if we have a general with them this week, perhaps.
Yeah, if that's to happen, like, I don't want them to think that there's...
This won't come out till Thursday.
Okay, perfect. Clear of the general.
It's Wednesday. We're fine. I think this is just like, we always thought like, okay, it's peak TV. It's like, when is the bubble going to burst? And I think it's about to in some way.
Yeah.
I think we're just going to be so disengaged at a certain point. I don't know.
There's just so much stuff everywhere. But what you were saying about like, not like being hesitant about getting into things.
Yeah.
See, I have the opposite problem. I will get into pretty much everything if it piques my interest, but then I will bail after the first season every time.
Okay.
Like I have like a... real. I want to get like a knowledge of a show, and then I discard it.
I respect that. I respect
commitment.
Because I know so many people. Well, you know, that's okay.
Yeah.
But there's so many people who are like, I haven't liked this since season one. And you're like, well, how are you on episode 400?
Yeah. Why the fuck are you still watching it then?
There's something admirable about bailing on a show.
Yeah. Well, I also think like, oftentimes like. the first season is the only good season of a show, and that because I think they do a really good job a lot of times of like setting up a show, and like that's how they get it sold and on air. And oftentimes now they'll buy like three seasons of a show like right off the top, like Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. The first three seasons have like already been ordered, and we've only seen one.
That's crazy,
right? And so now it's just like, okay, so what now? They can creative people that are working on that show can just put their resources elsewhere. And I'm not saying that show's going to tank, but I'm just saying like it could. It's already sold.
And lots of times the first season of something is what that creator has been making their whole life.
Yes.
Then the second season is what that creator made in 4 months.
Exactly. And oftentimes pilots too are like that.
Well, tell that to Parks and Rec, you motherfucker.
I'm actually rewatching Parks and Recreation right now, and I skip the first season.
Yeah, because it doesn't matter.
It sounds like someone said you have 2 hours to make the next office.
Yeah, truly. And then like they like sort of like archetype for archetype just like carbon copied it. Yeah.
That's what they say you should do though whenever you're writing a pilot. The advice I got was like put as much of the story that you can in the pilot. Like overwhelm the pilot with good shit and then worry about like what the rest of the season is going to look like once it's like sold or once it's like you know really figured out and compels the audience and has lots of, you know, great content in the pilot.
But that's what they taught you in dramatic writing school and before we got like Netflix original content.
Yeah. I did. That's why it's like maybe weird to go study screenwriting or television writing, because it's like that shit changes all
now
the time.
Now it's like get an 8-season arc and someone famous. One famous person in 8 seasons up
get
top.
Get a Vine star, an iPhone, and
can
a little bit of time.
Can you have made this into a web series already?
If there was a way
for you to come into this with a big established audience, you got to just write in a big established audience.
Right, exactly. Exactly.
Or now the advice they give you is be Margaret Atwood. And then,
Yeah, it is. It's maybe a little bit different, but you do want to. I've been writing stuff and I'll withhold jokes or something. I'm like, well, this will play really funny here. And I'm like, well, what if no one ever gets to see it?
Yeah, that's exactly right.
And my funniest thing is in the 5th episode.
No. Wow. Yeah, that's what they say. You should overwhelm your pilot with all the good shit.
Just like when you fly, just overwhelm your pilot with all the stuff.
Exactly. Be in the cockpit.
So, what is what of any movie, and it could be TV show, although it's what would you say is the biggest one you've missed?
Okay.
And it can be movie, TV show, because we get like there's like the huge stuff. No one has seen The Godfather.
I mean, I haven't seen The Godfather. I was just gonna say
this
that.
This is gonna be the new game. No, I haven't.
Have you seen The Godfather?
No one has seen The Godfather.
When was the last time someone has seen The Godfather?
Yeah. No one has seen it.
I haven't seen it. I have a major one that everyone always like yells at me for.
Yeah.
And I didn't even know this was something you could yell at.
Yes,
you know what
you,
I'm going to say.
You knew.
No, I didn't
know. You already know what it is.
But the thing is, like, he knows because we talk about this all the time. But like, when I say that I've never seen The Sound of Music, people want to kill me. I have to run for my life. I have to go
through
take
some
shelter.
Sort of field of flowers or something. You have to run through. Arms up.
The hills are alive for now.
Through a babbling brook.
But I'm very scared because I didn't understand. Like I didn't know that it was this movie that it's like a part of everyone's childhood and it's like a thing everyone's seen. You've seen it?
I have seen it.
And you've seen it.
I've seen it.
And everyone, all the producers, you guys have seen it.
It was a theater. I did theater, and it seemed to be. I mean, I'm not saying you didn't do theater. I don't know, but
no,
it was
you
like,
can say that because I did it. I didn't do theater.
It was no one who was a junior in high school who did theater didn't watch Sound of Music at some point.
Right,
it's just
like
shoved in.
I think I might have been weirdly sheltered in this way because I didn't see it. I never heard that I had to see it. But what I did see, and I think took its place, and I'm shocked that no one has seen, is Funny Girl. Barbara Streisand's Funny Girl.
There you go.
Have you not seen that?
No, I haven't.
Okay, I am going to go out there and say I haven't seen Sound of Music, but I think Funny Girl is a better
movie. How many times have you seen Funny Girl?
10, 11, 12 times.
Okay, so any of those 90 minutes could have been Sound of Music just
absolutely. But I don't know.
But if you wouldn't like it, you get time better spent.
The thing is, I'm sure I would like it. Are you like this where it's like everyone gets into something or everyone's seen something and a little part of you is like, I don't want to see that.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And we talk on here a lot where if someone tells you 1,000 times you would love something, you don't want to know what they think about you.
Yeah.
Because that means that's what they think about you.
Exactly.
Wow. And so they're like, what if they're wrong?
Exactly. Also, I haven't seen Game of Thrones.
I mean, I can't blame anyone for not getting into that at this point. It's 1,000 hours of television.
It's so much.
Truly.
And I don't love medieval violence. Like, it's not my favorite thing. It makes me a little anxious, and I don't like the idea of people getting sick.
It's done well. It's just it's one of those shows where it's like you get distracted for 2 seconds, and then you look back at the screen, and you don't know what's happening.
I don't know anyone's name. No, I've watched it all, and everyone is hair length and like girth.
Yeah, right.
Because it's just
which
like,
is wonderful.
Right, fat or no beard is talking to longest hair.
Longest hair.
Yeah.
Honestly, those are probably mine. Sound of Music is an epic one I haven't seen. Apparently, I have a lot of people. I join the ranks of a lot of people who haven't seen The Godfather.
That's what
and
we're
going to
do.
Currently, Game of Thrones.
We need to get a board. I don't know if we can put anything permanent in here. We need a board on the wall of has and hasn't seen Godfather because we're running about three people have seen The Godfather.
Wow.
And we're probably about 100 people into the podcast.
Surreal.
So literally 3%.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, there has to be some reward system in place for the people who have seen
They get their picture on the wall.
Yeah.
They get their picture on the wall.
Or you should see how straight they sit up when we start talking about it. They're like, oh, Godfather.
Wow.
I started with the third one. No one says that.
I probably would at this point.
That would be, I would like that take, where you only watch the third one and become very vocal about it.
Right. Sure.
And I refuse to watch the other ones. I think Godfather 3 is canon.
I have done some dumb, I watched Babel, and I remember the movie that
I've seen Ringo Kikuchi
with Miss Adriana Barraza.
Yes, Adriana.
And I didn't know captioning was supposed to be on. So I just downloaded it from the internet.
That's funny.
And I was watching Babel, and I'm like, oh, this is art. I'm interpreting these languages.
Yeah.
I'm figuring it out.
Yeah, and it was truly Babel.
Yeah, and I was like, honestly, I didn't get it. I'm like talking to people about it, and they're talking about plot points. I'm like, I don't know how you knew that nuanced of information.
Wow. You just thought they were
I thought you were supposed to get it.
You were supposed to like be disoriented with the language.
Yeah, I thought it was all a big presentation.
I can see that being like an artistic conceit. Sure.
Right, because everything visually, the stories are so different looking.
Yeah.
And everything. You see, here even I am talking myself into like it was on purpose. Now.
Right. It wasn't. You're fine.
And I've never rewatched it.
Yeah.
There you go. Because you were just so disoriented.
Yeah.
I'm having a lot of trouble. For a movie, I'm having a lot of trouble figuring out something. Although I will say, like, anytime there was a period of time when, like, you know, like, we're all, like, thirsty to get into comedy, and, like, people, like, will sort of transfer their knowledge and say, well, you should see this and this and this. Like, familiarize yourself with this. And, like, I guess I'll just go down this path of, like, haven't seen a lot of these movies that I feel like I should have seen.
Yeah.
Where it's, like, I guess, like, Airplane and, like, that kind of stuff.
Although you would love Airplane.
Stop, really?
No, you really would.
Are you saying like the John Candy-ish type of like that? Like
Caddyshack.
Caddyshack.
I've never seen Caddyshack. But Airplane, I think you actually would really
like
it.
It's
like
actually pretty great.
Really? Yeah, I mean, that's what I hear. Yeah. Like, I have no reason to not watch it, to resist.
It's so stupid. It's very like our sense of humor of like, it's dumb.
I sometimes talk to comedians about how movies like Airplane aren't made anymore.
No.
Where it's this is purely a comedy to be comedic.
Right. You know which one is like that? Did you see Popstar?
Oh, yeah, it is like
I thought that was, like, brilliant. That's what a comedy movie should be, just funny.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, so if you do, I think if you like Popstar, I think you would think Airplane is really funny.
I would probably
And the jokes in Airplane are funny, and they're jokes.
Yeah.
I mean, Don't Call Me Shirley, like, of course, like, classic. Yeah. But like,
you also love the scary movies.
I love the scary movies.
So you would love
parodies.
Airplane.
Yeah. Just because, just frivolous, stupid humor.
Now
we're
immediately doing what we said we hate when people do. We're like, yeah, but you would love this one.
No.
You would love this.
I thought it was a bit at first. I thought it was a bit. I was like,
No. I'm genuinely offering. Yeah.
Great. I will see it.
But you're right.
Yeah.
Like, those people come up and they're like, oh, you're a comedian. You know this.
Yeah.
Like, old Saturday Night Live.
You must love all the movies that I liked in my childhood because I'm 20 years older than you. Like, that's what I get a lot.
Like, whenever anyone goes, oh, SNL, too wild and crazy, guys. I'm like, I hate what you're doing.
My time. Yeah. I don't know. But, like
I hate
right.
It.
Yeah. Isn't that, have you talked about this yet? Like, there being this, like, some, like, compendium of movies that we're all supposed to see as comedians.
Yeah, you know, we haven't talked too much about comedy because I find so many comedians like dramatic movies or horror movies more than everything else.
Yeah, and also I think you'd be hard-pressed to find people who want to come on here and be like, yeah, I haven't seen this shit that I'm supposed to have seen.
Sure. And or let me rewrite this comedy and it'll be a super funny bit we do.
Right.
You're not going to get rewritten comedies.
But I miss a lot of comedies. I don't ever seek... I had to be talked into seeing, like, Popstar or something like that. People are like, no, I don't know. But all of that, I've seen Airplane, but I miss Caddyshack and The Jerk and, like, a lot of those things. I haven't seen Silent Movie. Yeah.
Right. Like,
Did you like Mel Brooks?
Literally, the only Mel Brooks thing that I've seen is Blazing Saddles.
Me as well.
Okay,
Young Frankenstein.
Oh, okay,
Young Frankenstein is I have seen, haven't seen Blazing Saddles.
And I just feel like a fraud, whatever.
Yeah, right.
No, that's the thing.
That's the whole part of all of this, is no one has come on here and seen everything.
Right, yeah.
Most people haven't seen almost everything.
Sure.
And aren't those people that really, really, really think and say they've seen everything, and then they have like knowledge to back it up? Aren't those people infuriating?
Yeah, it is. Yeah. And it's like, well, what do you say that isn't a movie quote at me?
Yeah.
Hello.
And wouldn't it be nice to learn something after you're 24?
Hello.
God bless.
Wait. Oh my God, what was I just going to ask? Oh my God, I just literally had an idea, and then I had a thing to ask you, and then I forgot. Oh, your comedy thing. Do you feel that you don't see comedies is because you feel like you're going to judge it, or you can't turn your brain off as a comedian, and is that why you are averse to them, or you're just not going to think it's funny because you see too much comedy?
I usually think they're pretty funny when I end up watching them.
Right.
Right.
And I kind of like almost everything. Mm-hmm. It's hard for me to go in and be like, this isn't good. But I just really would prefer a dramatic movie or like a caper movie or something like that.
Yeah.
It's like I like really heavy, dramatic, epic movies if I'm wanting to really pay attention. And if not, I'd rather just watch people rob a bank, honestly,
right,
like something like that where the pacing is entertaining to me. And then I always think the funny parts in dramatic movies are so much funnier than any comedy.
Right.
And the funny things that happen in like really
and they're surprising.
Dramas. Yeah.
Because
it plays a little better. But
it's like it's like in Jurassic World. Like, the whole movie is just like, you know, it has humor in it because it's a Jurassic Park movie or whatever, but I thought the funniest part of Jurassic World, by far, was this scene with Jake Johnson and Lauren Lapkus where he's, like, they're, like, evacuating the whole park because the like, shit is falling apart, and he, like, runs up to her. They've been coworkers the whole time, and he's about to kiss her, and she just goes, oh, my God, I have a boyfriend.
Yeah.
Which feels like, out of place.
It came out of nowhere.
Because it feels out of place because it's, like, a genuinely good comedy moment.
It's, like, pretty funny, and it didn't look like it was contrived for a blockbuster.
Exactly.
Yeah, no, it was just well performed, well written, just a good comedy bit that I can't believe I hadn't seen before.
Right.
That's now that teeters into my favorite movie of all time is Jurassic Park.
Is it?
That is if
That's
I had
a big
ground like that or like Groundhog Day or something like that.
Groundhog Day is really great. Like,
it's another one I haven't seen. But yeah,
you haven't seen Groundhog Day?
I have not seen it.
I kind of live for a long time my favorite genre of movie is probably comedian being dramatic. And then
it doesn't
even have to be that great of a movie. But I just don't believe a lot of great-looking people are dramatic.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, like you don't have conflict.
Like I'll watch Dan in real life and feel real nice or something.
I like
that.
Dan in real life.
What do you think about Eternal Sunshine?
I love Eternal Sunshine.
Yeah,
it's one of my all-time favorites.
But then it makes me mad at comedians for like making comedy. I'm like, don't do what you want. Serve me.
Yeah,
the guy
right.
You don't
right,
know.
Right. You have a depth that you don't even know about. That's I want.
Stop being this character in real life, Jim. Be it in a movie that you didn't write
so
or paint.
True.
There you go.
It's just a selfish thing of me, but yeah. These comedians in dramatic roles, I guess, kind of fall.
They're killing it. Also, like, it's so, I don't know, I just think, have you seen Away We Go?
No.
I don't know. Away We Go is Maya Rudolph and John Krasinski.
Oh, yeah, I remember.
From a while back.
Yeah.
Maya Rudolph is so amazing in it. She's just so dropped in. She's so natural. I think Kristen Wiig is an awesome dramatic actress. Yeah. Like, just, you know, you can feel a real person there.
Lots of times the scenes in comedies where there needs to be a fight, so I think about something like Bridesmaids, where there needs to be a disagreement, always work in a lot more realistic manner because comedians can do that a little. They can, like, switch these gears a little bit better.
Yeah.
And there's something more believable about Maya Rudolph and Kristen Wiig fighting than there is about two beautiful people fighting about something trivial.
Yeah. Yeah. Like Charlize Theron and Keanu Reeves can get the fuck out.
Yeah.
Wow. There's no room for all four of them.
There's no room for all four
for
of them.
Right.
It's
Keanu
either Sweet November.
We got triangular shaped tables at the wedding, so we can only have three.
Who is your favorite comedian that's also an actor?
Oh, that's so hard.
Yeah.
Favorite comedian that's also an actor, like dramatic actor?
Yeah, like turns a dramatic performance.
Oh my God, that's an impossible question.
Well, we came on the Never Seen It podcast, so you need to have all your film
takes
at the ready, honey.
I will say, like, my love for him is like definitely waned the last decade or two. But like as a kid, like obsessed with Jim Carrey.
Yeah.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And then the moment he came out with, even like Truman Show and even, but especially Eternal Sunshine, that was when I was like, my mind was blown. It was like, oh my God, he is so good at everything.
They also him walking the walk with Kate Winslet too, who's like so good.
Totally. Like, they're so well matched, which is insane. Like she's this Oscar winning actress.
Yeah.
I think because when he reels it in, he just becomes kind of the goofy guy you know.
Right. Yes.
Instead of being, he's the most over-the-top person.
Right.
But when he's reeling it in like Eternal Sunshine or like The Truman Show, he reels it back and then he's just the goofiest guy in a realistic world.
Who's yeah. still grounded. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And there was nobody like Robin Williams. Oh, there was nobody like Robin Williams. He was, I think, one of the most talented people ever.
Sure.
And Whoopi.
And Whoopi, yeah. no, truly.
Yeah. We forget about Whoopi.
I thought about her and Robin Williams both having very sad eyes.
Oh.
This is like getting way off the rails, yeah. but they both have very sad. When they smile, they look like they're doing, like, they look very sad.
Yeah.
When they smile.
You know what? That's actually true. Because you get the sense that there's a lot of, like, wisdom and knowledge there.
Yeah.
One of the, this guy just has nothing to do with movies, but I think about this with Robin Williams. He was doing stand-up in, like, Afghanistan, and Reveille went off, and all of the soldiers stood up in the middle of his set and turned and saluted the flag for the whole thing. I don't remember if it's Reveille, some song at some certain time,
yeah, sure.
and they all turn around and salute, and he just, like, stands completely still, and then it ends, and they all turn back around, and he's still standing there, and he goes, oh, I've bombed weirder. It's so funny.
That's so good.
Genius person.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
It's great. All right. Well, I like that. We got a quick game, but I could just sit around and talk about. We haven't really talked about comedy.
We
at all in this
the,
whole history
the
of the podcast.
Well,
it's
listen,
crazy.
We're here to bring the comedic discussion, the dramatic discussion about comedy. Introspection.
And we always kind of end here with a couple of dumb games.
Let's play some dumb games.
Play games. This one's called Before and Afters, so I told you guys here before the show. We smash a title into one, and I'll tell you the plot to the new movie.
Okay, great. Love
it. So like an example we always tell is The Wolf of Wally Street would be like a robot that sells penny stocks.
Right?
I love it.
So we got three of them. These were all submitted by Aaron in upstate New York, who sent me 150 before and afters.
Yes, Aaron!
Made it great for me because
oh my God, amazing.
I was bad at coming up with new ones because they would always be Oh Brother Where Art Thou and something else smashed together.
Because it's
got a lot of syllables, it's got a lot of rhymes.
Yeah, and or begin on O or Thou. Yeah.
Or just that Othello remake with
Oh Brother
Where Art
Julia
Thou.
Yeah, yeah. Yes, with Julia Stiles. Oh my God.
Was it Josh Hartnett?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. And Mekhi Phifer.
Yeah. Ah, yeah. Let's
Again,
just watch that one.
90s cast.
Right,
on
that only
fleek.
Feels like a movie that could come out in 1999,
yeah,
doesn't
yes,
it?
Yeah. With that cast, yeah, they can't get insurance
All right,
now.
I'm going to look that up real quick and see what year it came out. Because it's got to be. We're
gotta
looking
be 2000.
At 98.
I'm going to say 2000.
2002, I'm going to say.
2001.
Wow. Split the death. Okay.
Right.
It
in
came,
the middle.
Oh, wow. It says here it came out because of 9/11. No, it doesn't say that. We pushed a response.
This is a true story. Do you know what movie came out? Do you know what movie came out on 9/11?
Glitter.
Glitter.
Really?
Yeah.
not on Tuesday, September 11th.
No, but the soundtrack did come out on Tuesday, September 11th.
So it came out like September 13th or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. And I remember I woke up that day and I was so excited because that was the day, September 11th, 2001, that Mariah Carey's Glitter was dropping, the soundtrack album, and I was a huge Mariah fan. And then, of course, national tragedy occurred, but I made my mother drive me because I was 11 years old and didn't understand. We went to Best Buy and bought it.
You didn't understand that we were just been under attack?
No, because they weren't telling us anything. So I was just
We were sent home.
No, we were not sent home.
We were shown images on TV.
You will not shame me for my 11-year-old knowledge. We got to the Best Buy.
Wait, were you 11 or were you 9?
I was 11.
Okay, cool.
You were literally like 30 miles away.
You don't fucking know
on
me
Long
at that
Island.
Age.
You were on
you
Long
don't fucking
Island.
Know me at that age at all. I was on Long Island, yes. And we went to the Best Buy.
I was in landlocked Colorado, and I understood the gravity of what had just happened more
you,
acutely
bitch.
Than you
I
did.
I don't care about you. I care about myself.
God.
But at the time, I only cared about getting my fucking Get Myself a Lover, which was still my favorite track, underrated album. We went to the Best Buy, and they were like, "We're about to close." And my mom was like, "You don't understand.
Let's just play the game."
It's so funny. But it's just so funny to picture your mom like, "You're not going to stop him from getting inside."
Yeah, like, he wants the album. I can see it. I was like, "It's right there!"
You're a monster.
I know.
Oh, that means there was some Best Buy employee setting up a cardboard cutout of Mariah Carey.
Mariah,
and then someone's
like,
you have to come over here. Yeah. And he's like, "Just once I get this stood up." All right, so I'll give you the plot. You tell me. We got three of them here. Another big shout out to Aaron for sending these in.
Okay.
Here's the plot. Yeah, England's head of MI6 dispatches an agent to meet with a Hungarian general who knows the identities of two young kids who have become spies in order to save their parents.
The spy kids who loved me? Spy kids who love me.
It's close, but no.
Okay.
Spy kids were not enough.
It's not a James Bond.
Okay. Oh, okay. Okay, so head of MI6 sends something Hungarian.
Meet a Hungarian general.
Okay. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Is this a recent movie?
It's more recent than most.
Okay, there was an MI6 movie. Oh, is it the Jennifer Lawrence movie? No.
Red Sparrow? What's that?
Gary Oldman.
Gary Oldman. Oh, my God.
Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy Kids. Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy Kids. Oh, my God. Had the Aaron.
Thank you, Aaron.
That was fun out loud. It was fun. Good. I love the process. Here's number two. A cable installer attempts to strike up a friendship with a gambler by giving him free cable. who then bets he cannot get the virtuous Sarah Brown to go out on a date with him. Meanwhile, the gambler's longtime fiance pressures him to marry her.
Wait.
Okay, this is a complicated one.
Yeah, this one was so hard to put the plots together.
The cable guy?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
The cable guy's one of them. The cable guy next door? The cable guy...
The
plot to the second one was so vague.
Okay, can you repeat that?
Do it again.
So the cable... I'm even going to skip the first part because you got the cable guy.
Yep.
Blah, 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 blah. He then bets that he cannot get the virtuous Sarah Brown to go out on a date with him. Meanwhile, the gambler's longtime fiance pressures him to marry her.
Whoa.
The cable guy. Or maybe is it the cable? No.
The Simpsons once did a parody of this in one of the episodes.
Oh, my God. Virtuous Sarah Brown? What the fuck is the virtuous Sarah Brown?
The cable guy.
There's a bet involved.
Yeah.
What's that movie? The famous movie with the bet.
What? She's all that.
She's all that.
No,
that
it's older than that.
Oh my God,
oh,
it's Kyle. We might be stumped.
Maybe we might be stumped.
That's okay. Let me think.
Aaron, you got us.
If this helps at all, Marlon Brando and Frank Sinatra are the two guys.
The cable guy is in Dolls.
The cable guy is in Dolls.
Oh,
yes, honey.
There you go.
Yep, Sarah Brown, the virtuous Sarah Brown.
Yes.
Just it's so the old. When you look up the plot for an older movie, it's always the same thing. It always is man forces woman to marry him.
Yeah. Yep.
It's every movie until 1960.
Well, and this one, though, the woman takes agency. Adelaide is like, a poison can develop a cold. Yeah, and she's I'm getting a cold because you won't marry me.
So it's the woman taking agency.
Yeah.
Thank you, Aaron, for reminding us of that.
All right, last one. This one is dumb. Highly intelligent robots fill public service positions, operating under three rules to keep humans safe. But one robot creates controversy when she pursues her dreams of becoming a figure skater and gets caught up in an attack on a fellow skater.
Okay.
I, Robot Tanya.
Also, AI Tanya would have almost worked the exact same
Tanya.
Way.
AI Tanya!
Wow. Oh, that just sounds like how the people in I, Tanya said hi to Tanya.
Yeah. Honestly, that was a very easy one. Thank you,
That one's pretty easy.
Merciful.
That was a good mix there. That's it. That's before and afters. And now we end the show with a fan script. So if you guys if you're fans of the show, and we don't know what movie it is yet, and it doesn't.
Unsurprised.
We'll just be whoever we get.
Wow, this is
great.
A very popular film.
Love it.
I love my casting.
So we are going to be doing Fast and Furious. This is by Zach Greenham. Thank you, Zach.
Thanks, Zach,
for sending this in. If you guys are listening and you want to send one in, send it to neverseenitshow@gmail.com. So three pages is always great of a movie or TV show you've never seen, and we may read it here. So great. this is Fast and Furious. We'll let everyone know who we're playing here.
So I'll be reading the stage directions and playing the amazing Michelle Rodriguez.
Yes. I will be playing reading for Gerard and Fast.
And I will be FBI Agent 1 and Furious.
Amazing. And I think Zach's written based on the Fast and Furious franchise, which I have not seen, and Tango and Cash, of which I have seen 25 minutes.
That's a good note.
Great.
Okay, are we ready?
Ready.
Yes.
Fade in. Interior. Parking garage. Night. Guard sits in his guard booth thing watching a tiny staticky TV. Suddenly, two sports cars blast through either side of his booth, smashing the wooden gates like they're nothing. Guard throws his coffee up in the air. It makes a mess.
God damn, those cars are fast.
Insert. Sports cars and interiors. Two shot. Vin Diesel slash Fast on one side of the screen, and Paul Walker slash Furious on the other.
And furious. And furious.
Wipe two, interior, deeper in the parking garage. Continuous. Michelle Rodriguez stands by her car among the group of extras from the Black Eyed Peas Pump It music video. The entire music video happens except with Michelle Rodriguez in the background. The Black Eyed Peas then leave and the goons dust themselves off. Para suerte! Just then, the two sports cars from the beginning enter side by side. They never leave their cars. You're late.
Someday I'll drive so fast I'll be able to reverse time.
But until then, you'll have to be fine.
With us being late.
That is your fate.
Michelle Rodriguez is unimpressed, but reaches into her pocket and pulls out a sticky note with an address on it.
I heard the cops are going to bust a dealer at this address. You boys got to get going.
Yes, we must.
With us, this task you can trust.
Oh, montage, cars driving through the night. 90 minutes of quick cuts of the two driving through the city. Inserts on them shifting gears and driving around corners. They are in Beverly Hills now. I don't know where any of the movies take place except Tokyo Drift, which is presumably set in Tokyo. End montage. Cut two, interior drug den later that night. Fast and Furious are in their cars in a large room lit by a single light, which illuminates a dead man sitting in a chair with his hands zip-tied behind his back. And a police wire obviously taped to his exposed chest.
What's going on here?
We must alert the police of our dead peer.
Anonymously, so we are not blamed.
Exactly. I would hate to be maimed.
A helicopter is heard from outside the room and a searchlight flashes through the window. Suddenly, the door is smashed open by FBI Agent 1.
Freeze, dirtbags!
FBI agents 2 and 3 enter and boot Fast and Furious' cars. The two reach out their windows and hold hands. It's tender. Lots of fast cuts of them looking towards each other directly into the camera. Fade out to a dozen sequels.
Yay.
I like that. That was great.
I want to make one thing clear. When I said pura suente, which is a word that I made up, I was supposed to, in parentheses, you gave this, Zach, directive. Something in Spanish that sounds mean towards everyone who's asked. Got kicked.
That's convincing.
Pura suerte.
Yeah, I think that's convincing. I think that was it.
Now, okay, are they just Tweedledee and Tweedledum, basically? They're just, like, finishing each other's
rhymes? I think
rhymes. He's
trying to say that he assumes that these are two dumb idiots who drive around, which is, you know, not entirely wrong.
He's not wrong, and I've seen all of the Fast and the Furious movies,
yes.
And like all of them, but maybe one and a half of them.
Okay, which ones don't you like?
I don't think Tokyo Drift is very good.
Famous.
And
yeah,
I thought the most recent one didn't quite figure it out. Hmm. But then the action was still pretty entertaining.
Post Paul death?
Yeah.
This is the last one without Paul. The one with Charlize Theron and dreadlocks.
Truly, 15 years ago, could you have told someone a franchise would end if Paul Walker left it? No, that would have made no sense.
I can't believe it's as huge as it is. It has a ride at Universal Studios, you guys.
I think it
I
is.
Love it.
They all make a... I once, and we know Anna Dresden and Joel Kim Booster had a show called... Fuck that movie.
Famous.
I did Star Wars.
I
movie for movie said that Fast and Furious was better than the Star Wars franchise. Because I was like, Star Wars has what? 4.5 good movies?
Oh.
Yeah.
But then and three huge bad ones.
Right.
I was like, Fast and Furious has one bad. They had the same amount of movies that had come out at the time. And I was like, well, if you're doing a cross of each one, if we do a comparative situation, people will get upset.
Oh no, my God. The
Wait.
Math checks out. That's
I
good,
missed
Kyle.
That show.
That's a good show.
Fuck That Movie was such a good show.
But now they've both blown up and they can't.
Yeah, now they're both,
just blown up.
Yeah. So if I can just slide into whatever slot they were leaving for tangential movie world,
yes.
I'll go ahead and take that.
Oh, wow.
Thank you guys very much for coming on the show.
Thanks,
this was
Kyle.
So fun.
So great.
Thank you guys.
Thank you so much for
tell everyone
us.
where to check you guys out.
You can listen to us on our own podcast called Las Culturistas. We do shows quarterly in New York. They're super fun. So check us out there.
Yeah, they're called I Don't Think So, Honey. And just check out if we're going to be doing a live show, usually in New York. We do them at the Bell House. When is this going to come out?
Thursday.
Okay, baby. You can see us at the Bell House on June 29.
Yeah.
Thanks for considering.
Hey, thank you guys for listening. If you want to send in a script, it's neverseenitshow@gmail.com. And we have the Patreon page if you want to check it out. We've got bonus readings there, video from today's episode, video from live shows and things like that. And we'd appreciate it a great deal. It's patreon.com/neverseenit. And if you want to leave reviews and subscribe and tell your friends, it all helps. And I appreciate everyone listening. It's nice to have a thing that people actively want to be a part of. And it makes
me
very happy.
So cool.
Thank you guys
you
so much.
It. Thanks.
It's a good show.